additional business. Ms. Cornwell, we had asked if we did, do we have the layers of those, you know? It's been an item of discussion for as long as I've been on the commission, why the commission districts don't line up better with the councilmatic districts. So we asked the staff to actually create an overlay which we could see how significant the problem is or if it's not. So, and I haven't seen this, so we'll all look at this for the first time. And do you want to explain the lines to us?
I'll even give some history. Mr. Johnson even probably remembers some of this. It started out and
his fault.
It was his fault. So the lines originally were the councilmanic districts.
I remember these.
You know, are fairly close. And you'll look on here, the planning commission areas are in black and the councilmanic districts are in the sort of mustard color, orange, whatever it is. Back in the 2000s, when things were really sort of cranking along, if you look at the, and I'm not sure which number it is, but the one on that has Lewis and Milton in it, that probably had, I would say, Mr. Wheatley, probably 75% of all the applications at that point. And so
we would have evenings when everything on the agenda had MJ after it.
Right.
I mean, it was
or
just,
Leighton Johnson, Ms. Father.
Or LJ. Yeah. It was, that's how bad it was. That's why it was done.
Yeah.
Good reason.
And at that point, it was as much just to try to divvy up the workload, particularly on the eastern side. I don't remember, and I know we did it. It's not like we didn't do it, but I don't remember moving the lines.
Well,
the way they resulted here, but
my recollection is that once we started changing those, it made the others look strange. So we had to change, mm-hmm. change to 3, 4, and 2, 3, and 4, and then that made 1 and 5 look kind of odd. So then we changed that. So we ended up changing all 5 of them.
I think that was sort of Mr. Lank that drew those lines.
Yeah.
And it doesn't require, so it's not something that's in our rules. It's not in Title IX. It's not in county code anywhere. The makeup of the commission is all those places, but the informal areas that, basically it was set out originally so that everybody sort of knew who was going to take the lead on a matter. And also it just sort of coordinated so that the council people knew who was going
to
be
talk to.
Who to talk to and who was going to be in that area. Yeah.
And that's what brought it to discussion because council members would call and say, well, why is not my commissioner handling this item that's in my district?
The person I appointed.
So it's confusing for the council people. It's also confusing for the public and then sometimes the applicants. They get confused as to what's really going on. So this is just, I don't know that we have to take action on this tonight.
It's just
in fact,
information.
I think it's information. I think we should probably think about it and decide if we want to take action or not. We don't have to. The one thing that if we should decide we wanted to more copy or emulate the councilmatic districts, we would want to make sure that we don't carve anybody out, a sitting commissioner, out of their district inadvertently. So that would be the only thing that we would have to consider. And we may want to, when we get to the rules of procedure discussion, decide if we want to revisit this at times when the councilmatic districts are changed, because they get changed every 10 years after the census.
That would be the time somebody might get drawn. I mean, we can redraw these artificial commission lines any which way we want. The lines that govern us are the councilmanic district.
Yes, and so that would be something that, we could probably put in our rules of procedure to say, hey, within 6 months of councilmatic district lines, we review the commission lines to see if the commission chooses to change them or not. Obviously, we wouldn't want to change them in a way that cut somebody out that was a sitting commissioner. So I think, I don't know, unless there's a penchant by the commission to take some action, I think let's just look at this and we can bring it back up at a future meeting for further discussion. That's okay.
I think that's the consensus.
Okay. If there's no, you okay with that, Ms. Hoyes?
Yeah.
There's
I'm
no
glad
objection
to see this,
to that.
To tell you the truth, I wasn't sure how far off I was.
we discovered that, we'll move on to the rules of procedure. Mr. Robinson, I'd like you to lead this discussion. We discovered that some of the rules of procedure may not be quite in line with FOIA. Others might be a little bit outdated. So, Mr. Robinson, do you want
to? And it wasn't like there was anything that was wrong in them. It was more that they just, that they potentially were misleading because they didn't say that they were subject to FOIA. You know, like the rule said one thing, but FOIA might say something else. Like the first one is Rule 1.1. I know Mr. Ross asked this, and some of you all might not have any familiarity with it. It's the order of business conduct of meetings. The one that Mr. Ross questioned was the consent agenda, and that actually, so it shows up after the approval of minutes on an agenda, and it shows up again later on at Rule 4A. You know, and the question was, what's this, what's it do, what's it for? What the commission did was probably, at this point, maybe 10 years ago, we had so many other business items, final site plans, things that staff was reviewing, you know, like the other business we had tonight, but there would be a list of, like, sometimes 20 or 25 items on an agenda. Got to the point, as I think Mr. Wheatley remembers, you know, where we were having special meetings, and even special meetings were going long. The consent agenda process was where there were ordinary staff final site plan approvals that had been through all the agency comments. They'd be just listed on the agenda as part of the consent agenda. Any commissioner could pull them off and have, you know, discussion on it. But if not, rather than have, you know, 14 individual motions, it was one motion to approve the consent agenda. So interestingly, county council, after the commission did that, they adopted the same process to deal with agreement or approval of sewer agreements. That was the thing for that. I don't know with that one. We don't use it because we don't have the volume anymore. And honestly, the commission and staff are, you know, in the meetings are spending time asking questions about these final site plan approvals. My thought would be to leave it on, you know, in the rules so that it's available as a tool if we need it. But that's up to you all if you want to. I know Mr. Ross sort of asked the question, what's it for and do we need it?
It doesn't hurt for it to be in the rules. We haven't used it for a long time, but we did. At the time, it was a major time saver. I mean, it cut the number of meetings down. That's how crazy it was.
Well, and since we hadn't used it, I highlighted it just
for
the discussion.
Yeah.
Good idea. Okay. Let's leave that in.
All right. The next one that, and some of these, I think Mr. Ross and I talked about, I don't remember who originated them. I know this was one that Mr. Ross brought up in Rule 2, particularly 2.3, talks about special meetings and executive sessions may be held as provided in Title 29, Chapter 100 of the Delaware Code. And it says special meetings may be called by the chairman upon at least 48 hours notice to each member. The rules say that. Unfortunately, FOIA doesn't say that. It's pretty specific on special meetings. They have to be in an emergency situation. Looking at how the Department of Justice, which is the agency that has approval or authority over FOIA, you know, they've been really limiting on, you know, what constitutes an emergency for a meeting. So we need to fix this one because, you know, it's misleading to whomever the chairman is and the commissioners and even people who say, well, you can just call a special meeting. So we need to fix that so that it is more clear whether you can do it or whether you can't do it. So that's one that we're going to address.
The timing has to match up with 40.
Yeah, the timing has to match up.
Posting of the meeting.
Yeah.
So I would suggest that, you know, Mr. Robinson, you just take a swing at a language change and we'll come back when we get a strike through.
Well, and the thing is, and I'll back up, but I think what we're going to do, because Mr. Ross sort of talked about how we're going to, and I talked about how we're going to do this, what we're going to do is go through, you know, kind of maybe get to some informal head nods on this, and then I'll come back with the red line version, and if everybody's good with it, we can just sort of approve the whole thing. But back to this one, there's no reason why the chairman couldn't call a special meeting that's not on a Thursday. To be clear, you just have to do it within the requisite time period. You can also call a meeting within 48 hours, technically, but that has to be for an emergency, and that category is very narrow. So I think we need to clarify that there's like an extra meeting versus an emergency meeting. So anyhow.
Can you take a swing at the language and then we'll...
The other one I know Mr. Ross asked, and this comes up, was... The the 200-foot requirement for 200-foot radius. Is everybody fine with that number?
I'm okay with it, but.
Yeah.
Okay, okay. Just looking at.
I would like to bring, I don't have the rule in front of me, but one question that has come up with the 200-foot rule is, you know, if there's a, like a manufactured home park adjacent to, or a condo association or something like that, is the intent that the that it goes to the association or the manufactured home park owner or to the individual lots?
I think what we should do, that actually brings up a good point, because the Delaware Alcoholic Beverage Control Commission actually had this issue come up, and it was litigated in court. I wasn't involved, and I was sort of following it, and they got into a real dispute on notice requirements that they had for a liquor license, and it had to do with a manufactured home park. And the issue was, you know, they're property owners because they own personal property. And historically, the commission, the Alcoholic Beverage Control Commission, and applicants had done what you said, which is notify the property owner, which is the park owner. I think for our purposes, And I'll go a step further with that. The issue with that is you can't always get addresses for all those manufactured homes, depending on how they're titled and whatever else. But that brings up a good point on this one to clarify that it's the real estate property owner.
Or the HOA.
Well, see, it wouldn't be the HOA because
that
we don't have an address for them, because we have to go off the assessment record addresses for anybody. I mean, if the HOA owns property, you know, like common areas
That's
or whatever.
What I mean,
yeah, no, they would get noted.
A condominium.
Yeah.
You would have a property owner.
Yeah, yeah. But that's a good pickup that I'll make that change on. The next one is just 4.2, just clarifying that it's subject to FOIAs. 4.3, I think it's, you know, it also says items which arise at the time of the Planning and Zoning Commission's meeting may be added to the agenda. That's one I'm going to revise just to make it FOIA compliant. You know, we can't really, in limited situations, but you really can't just go adding things to the agenda without getting into trouble. Let me look at this one. Yeah, the 4A was the consent agenda again. And then skipping ahead, we're going to update. It currently says digital or magnetic tape recordings. Really, we're not doing either at this point. I mean, it's all electronic, you know, and with audio and video. So we're going to update that to reflect how we actually record the meetings.
That's digital,
yeah.
Isn't it?
Yeah, maybe. Probably, I guess. But it's not magnetic tape recordings. Yeah. So.
And magnetic.
Yeah. And also reference on there what we need to do, because to the extent somebody would look at these rules and want to find out information, reference where it's archived to on the county's website. And then Mr. Ross asked on 15.5 if the provisions in here for somebody failing to appear for a public hearing, if they match what was in the code, because the code was actually reworked, came through the commission and also council, so that if somebody doesn't show up, you know, can they get some relief? And there was a process that was spelled out, you know, so it was pretty strict and steps it had to follow. And I actually, Mr. Ross went back and looked, and it does follow what's in the code. So yeah, we wanted to make sure it matched, and it does. And I think that was really it.
That was it.
Yeah. So what I'm going to do, I just wanted to run through those. What I'm going to do is rework this with a red line, you know, get it out to you all to look at, and then we do have to, on this, make a motion to adopt it.
So. Okay, that process. Yeah. Sir, did you have an interest in these proceedings? Sir? Did you have an interest in this topic?
No.
Okay. Mr. Johnson, you came to visit us. You might as well come on up here and say hi.
Agenda.
I
think
come on up.
Like, yeah, come on up.
Come on up and join the crowd. You know, yeah. Exercise those old bones.
Every time I ride around the circle, I just start grinning. I know I'm not coming here.
It's going to be long. We grinning right with you.
But, yeah, obviously with my coming up with under other business, you know, that consent agenda item was something that always concerned me as a commissioner, because we have so many items, it just was impossible, at least for me as a commissioner, to be on top of all that. So that's why I'm glad the commission evolved and went away from that consent agenda. So that piqued my interest, and that's why I was kind of hanging around to see if you were going to address the the consent agenda. But historically, probably why the districts got changed the way they did, I don't want to speak ill of the dead, but the former chairman Jack and my dad had some issues, because Jack was one of Dad's sergeants and a guard. So his way of paying Dad back was making work harder. So that's why I gave him that Lewis Rehoboth quarter. So that's probably.
Hey, he wasn't afraid to bring it up, either one of them, in the meetings, too.
You have an opinion on whether we should try to match up with the council mounted districts or not? I mean, does it matter?
Well, again, that's hard, because if it's, you know, all in IG's district, if that's where things are booming, or in Mr. Arlett's district, you know, then you got that impact on that commissioner. And I know that Mrs. Stevenson doesn't want to be inundated any more than I was all those years. I just figured Bob had something out for me, because, like you said, about 75% of them were mine. So
I did, but it wasn't that. It wasn't that.
Well, the district lines, I mean, as now, Janelle does a great job of dividing the workload up, regardless of the lines. But on normal application, it gives some predictability to try to align them with the council minutes.
Oh, absolutely.
District lines as much. It doesn't preempt the commission from, you know, deviating from that. I mean, we can assign whatever lead we want. I think Janelle does a great job in dividing the work of the commission up, and I appreciate that. So it has nothing to do with, it has less to do with the workload than just the perception of the public responsibility of matching up to the councilman.
Yeah, I know my councilman would call me from time to time, and they weren't in my area. And, of course, you know, part of the public hearing, I was involved anyhow. But, you know, he never really understood why certain things weren't being handled by me, or, you know, that I wasn't the lead. I mean, none of us did it by ourselves. I mean, we all do it as a group.
Five commissioners regardless, that's right.
Yeah. Right. So, you know, I was only one of five. But again, you know, so if people wanted to call and ask questions, I'd always tell them, well, if you want to ask a question, show up at the public hearing. Because I never saw people outside of you know, the public hearings, because otherwise I wouldn't get any work done. So, you know, I think that was my own personal approach as to how I handled it as a commissioner. You know, if you want to talk to me, show up here, you know. That way there wasn't anything questionable taking place. But the idea behind the, as much as you can, having it assigned to that commissioner that's appointed by that council person kind of makes sense, you know. But as long as, you know, the staff is able to lighten the load as, you know, as you can, you know. Of course, Bob wants to have his back, because life is good on the Western Sussex. Anymore. It was getting a little warm there for a while, but that cooled off pretty quick. So
yeah, it'll come back.
They'll come back. That's right. Once all those folks think we run out of land on the eastern side, then it'll move west. But
thank you, Mr. Johnson.
Yes.
We'll see you tomorrow night.
Yep.
Any other comments on either issue by sir?
May I have a minute?
I guess.
My name is Walter.
Well, just real quick before we go,
hold on.
Sure. No, well, before we do,
we don't have,
just talking about FOIA. We don't really have an open.
We don't have an open
public comment period.
Yeah.
I mean, I know we asked you up, so we're going to allow you to
just briefly.
This is with regard to what I've heard as a 200-foot rule.
Oh, okay.
That's in the rules of procedure. So that's okay.
Right.
Go ahead.
Yeah. Okay. I'm speaking not as a League of Women Voters rep.
Well, I'm sorry, did you tell us? I missed your name.
I think he did say his name.
Name?
Yeah, tell me your name. I missed it.
The name is Walt Trella, Trella.
Okay.
38914 Blue Indigo Road in Sylvia.
Great.
Anyhow, I was at another meeting not too long ago, and I'm new at all this stuff, as you can tell. And the whole idea of who gets notified, and this was with regard to a master plan, comprehensive plan, and so on. There's an awful lot of activity going on in and around my community, which is Bayside on Route 54, a lot of sewer work going on. And frankly, I do not recall ever being notified that this was going to happen. I know sometimes you have signs that say you're going to have a public meeting on such and such, okay? and frankly, I didn't pay that much attention to it. But it's interesting that this you had a discussion again a little earlier about whether you're talking, I'm going to call them mobile homes or whatever, okay, and trying to identify who is, what is it, within 200 feet of a of an area that's being considered
of
by
the subject,
commission?
Yeah.
Of an application.
Somebody said 250 feet earlier.
It's 200.
It's 200.
200 feet of the subject property.
Okay. Anyhow, I was just curious as to just exactly how you figured that out. I didn't get a clear answer about the master plans and just exactly how are the homeowners or property owners identified or
so what
informed.
They do, and now just so we're clear on sewer projects, that's a completely different project or process. That's not the same. But for these, the property owners' addresses, names and addresses are determined from the Sussex County assessment records. So you basically look at the tax maps, figure out, you know, a radius of 200 feet from the property lines, more or less. And
well, actually, we use GIS.
Oh,
so
yeah.
We it's a very specific, you know, we select the tax parcels. So like tonight, we had one that was multiple. We can select one or two or three or how many of applicate parcels are being part of that application. And we tell the computer, get us all the properties within 200 feet, and it gets back us a list, and then we verify that list, and it's the addresses that come out of the tax records that we send the mailings to.
Okay, thank you. I will be looking into that a little bit more so I have a better understanding. Okay, thank you.
Well, it's just so you know, it's not in code, it's in our rules of procedure.
Well, it is in code on one, and I always got to look at it. It's in Title IX for
subdivisions.
Subdivisions, yeah.
And it's in
our, yeah, and it, yes, and it's in our rules for everything, basically. Yeah.
Subdivisions handled differently than individual properties.
No, for the notice requirements, subdivisions are treated differently than change of zones. There's two different processes.
Okay.
So, yeah.
All right, thank
and
you.
And just so whoever's watching online as well is we actually create a map that shows all the properties within 200 feet. So, like, if you have concerns, like, I'm not within 200 feet, you can actually come look at that map. And we also have the list that says these are the property owners that were within 200 feet as well.
Right.
So we have that both electronically, so any or in paper, it's in the paper file as well. So if anybody's ever concerned, they can take a look.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you. Okay, we're going to go back to our earlier public hearings. The first public hearing was subdivision 2018-2, Outer Banks North and Outer Banks South.
Mr. Chairman, I move to defer for further consideration.
Second.
We have a motion and second to defer action for further consideration the decision on subdivision 2018-2. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Motion carries 5-0. Our next public hearing was conditional use number 2124, Jerry Burke.
Okay, so this one, since I'm the one who's going to be mulling this one over.
I think we should
first
defer.
I'm definitely going to defer, but I want to know if you guys have any thoughts or questions. I mean, I guess it could all be moot if we find out that it's not. That
yeah, I think Mr. Wheatley pointed out that, you know, we first thing we have to do is find out the deed restrictions.
Yeah, we have the deed in the file. I think what you all need to think about a little bit is, you know, if this was a business, let's just say a business, not her business. You know, typically the commission has said in a restricted residential development, you know, we're not going to allow business uses.
Yeah,
but I don't know.
Is that lot part? Is it real? I mean, I know this was the testimony of some people, but is it in fact a lot in that subdivision? Though that's my question.
Yeah, or whether it's just subject to restrictions.
Right, because if it is a lot in the subdivision, subject to this all the other restrictions of the subdivision, then yeah, typically we haven't allowed those kind of activities in a subdivision.
Yeah,
conditional uses generally we have not done conditional uses inside of a subdivision.
Okay. Because I know there are other businesses being run in that. I mean, but they're, you know,
yeah.
The Mason has his his office there.
Unoccupied.
But the stipulation that she referred to was that you could not have customers come onto the premises.
Yeah, right. And that's different. Right, I know. That's why we got to look at it. And the other thing is, this isn't a typical subdivision, because they said these are farmettes, and the types of things she's doing are farm uses.
And that was, Jody told me the story of how they came up with that idea. So.
For the whole place.
For the whole place.
Yeah. Outside of the, the deed restriction, I don't have a real problem with trying to come up with conditions and recommend approval.
I think it could be.
I
think, it's more than a noble idea. I mean, autistic kids is much a one-on-one type of education, and anybody that's willing to spend their time with them ought not be deterred.
Just getting kids to find out how stuff comes to their table these days is worthwhile. Yeah. I mean, we're at the flower show in Philadelphia, and some woman said, "Look, honey, this is how corn is grown," and she's taking pictures of it. I'm like, "You're kidding me."
Chicken's an old thing, and even the commercial chicken. I mean, kitchen. We can put conditions on that so that it's not a big operation.
And so. I think that so a couple things to me is one is, it seemed like they were hung up on the commercial kitchen, and people are envisioning like the kitchen you would see in a school building, and
that $400,000 kitchen, $500 tin building.
Yeah, right. Well, which is not what she was saying. I think,
I thought you asked some very good salient questions on that one, Mr. Yeah.
If I recall from my conversation with her, because I talked with her initially when this first came up, and my understanding with the commercial kitchen is public health requirements, I think, for what she'd like to do. So public health requires, and Department of Agriculture, I believe, requires a commercial kitchen for preparation.
Yeah, I don't think the applicant really understands, Ms. Wheatley pointed this out, that she understands what she's asking for from the state agency approval, which is a different cup of tea.
Well, and the other thing is, I think that we got off on a bit of a red herring about the affiliation with the schools.
Yeah.
That was maybe part of it, but it was more like families or one-on-one,
or
homeschool kids. Right.
Yeah. Right. It's not our job to figure out if it's going to be successful or not.
We don't guess the market. That's their job.
Well, from my perspective, I saw a really fair share of arrogance.
It was a bit of a tough group.
That's I'm being nice about that.
and while we're talking about it, I apologize to all of you for channeling Donald Ralph. For those of you who don't know Mr. Ralph, I'll explain it to you after class.
Well, I didn't know if we needed to call New York and see if we could get some,
accept permission or not. I suggest you listen to the tape thoroughly. I think we all probably need to listen to parts of it.
I think we need some time,
make a motion to defer for further consideration.
Second.
We have a motion and a second to defer action on conditional use number 2124, Jerry Burke. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Motion carries.
Ross, we're going. This is Stephen that asked the question. I think for the next meeting, probably won't necessarily act on it, because I'll just report back what we find, and that way you all can then discuss it.
I would like to see it done that way, because that gives us another chance to talk about it.
Yeah.
Too.
For us to review it.
So, then we can put it on for a vote or a motion some other time.
Makes sense. Okay, motion carries 5-0. Our next item is conditional use number 2125, RS Cordry Farms, LLC.
So, do you want me to defer, or do you want to just state something and I'll...
You got to give them a little more notice than that.
Yeah. Sorry, you should have given me the high sign.
Sorry.
Yeah. No, but it won't matter, because
all we're going to do is just whatever the original one, but you still need at least 10 seconds.
Yeah, and the other thing is it's not going to hold them up, because
we're
going to have a meeting before it gets to council anyway, so you're not causing any problems.
Mr. Chairman, in regard to CU 2125 RS Cordry Farms, LLC, I'd like to move that we defer for further consideration.
Second.
We have a motion.
I'm sorry about that, too. I should have read the tea leaves a little better on that one.
I just went back through my mind that they want the same thing.
Yeah, right.
So just an expanded area.
It'll be easy enough to prepare.
Okay, we have a motion and a second to defer action on conditional use number 2125. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Motion carries 5-0. That's all the items on our agenda. Is there anything else for the good or the order? Hearing none, we are adjourned.